You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Brees out of the shotgun. Now he bobbles the snap, and he's got a receiver wide open to the goal line. And there's Michael Thomas for the second time in 2 weeks with the touchdown.
Here comes the pressure. Ryan in the pocket. Matt looks, throws, touchdown, Mohamed Sanu. Snap to him. Brees shoots it. End zone intercepted. Oh, my goodness. Deion Jones.
And the Atlanta Falcons are going to get out of here with one of those roll-up-your-sleeve NFC South battles.
Oh, Mike Tirico puts it all in perspective. That's what Tirico does. Deion Jones makes a jumping interception in the end zone with 1:25 to play. The Atlanta Falcons, a 20-17 victory over the Saints on Thursday night in Atlanta. A huge win for Atlanta, the defending NFC Conference champions, and it gives them big hope in the NFC South to maybe even steal the division. Can you believe it? Dan Hans is here with Greg Rosenthal. Wes and Sess coming up in a little bit. But Greg, the Atlanta Falcons found a way on a day, and who would have thought on a night where Matt Ryan, the defending MVP, throws three interceptions, does not play the game you needed him to play, and they still found a way, and that's very impressive.
It was. They had to get it. It was one of those games that just it changes the rest of the season, that Deion Jones interception. A career-making play for him. I mean, he's been a great player for them. It's been a young, you know, just the start of his career, but that is a signature moment and a poor pass by Drew Brees. And in the end, that throw, that decision, and then the execution, really, of the throw, and then Sean Payton, the Saints coach, running out onto the field and getting a penalty, which prevented them, the Saints, from getting the ball back with maybe about 20 seconds left and at least having a chance to go try to kick a field goal. Like, the two pillars of the organization kind of let them down at the end. And you can blame the officials for that call on Sean Payton, but man, he was running out on the field with some murder in his eyes. I don't know. So I don't blame the official either.
Sean Payton, I know he's a Bill Parcells disciple. But you know, there's no law against being a nice guy, Sean. And all game he was barking at those officials. He even saw him getting mad at him for taking too long to look at a touchdown score. Yeah. I mean, Sean Payton, if you scream at the officials and you get on their case all game, when he comes storming at him off the sidelines with, like, again, like Greg said, kind of like murder in your eyes, you know, sometimes they're going to pull out the laundry and say, "Get away from me." So I know there are going to be Saints fans that are furious.
Yeah, there were some shaky calls throughout the game. One especially, a roughing the passer on Matt Ryan, which kept the drive going that ended in a touchdown in the first half. But don't blame it on the officials, Saints. You can blame it on your injury luck if you want, or Drew Brees' last throw, but don't blame it on the officials.
The Saints all beat up in this game. The biggest loss early on, Alvin Kamara suffers a concussion. Hopefully it will not be something that keeps him out more than one game, but he essentially missed this entire game, which really killed the Saints because they've been humming this season, Greg, with that two-headed monster in the backfield with Mark Ingram and Kamara. And Ingram still made plays in this game, but they're just not the same team without Kamara, who's been so special.
No, and they've been a little more erratic now over the last month offensively. Until the last few minutes of the game against Washington, really didn't have their mojo. Certainly didn't in Los Angeles. For the most part, you had it against Carolina last week, but this week only end up with 17 points, 306 yards. It was a very challenging game for Sean Payton to call when Kamara is suddenly out. And then on the other side of the ball, you lose A.J. Klein, Kenny Vaccaro. Those are two starters. Trey Hendrickson, David Onyemata, if I'm pronouncing that right. I mean, Kelemete, their starting guard.
Senor Kelemete.
That's six guys who are playing huge snaps. So I thought they had such a great chance to make such a statement win, to bury the Falcons, to basically win the NFC South. That's how big this result was. Saints would have basically had this division on lockdown because they have a game and a half lead over the Panthers and the tiebreaker over the Panthers. The Falcons would have been totally out of it. Now the division is in all three teams' hands. I know you know, control your own fate or whatever it is. All three teams win the division if they win out because they're playing each other down the stretch. And the Falcons-Saints game in Week 16 is now setting up as one of the games of the year in the NFL.
I think the Falcons, we talked about this a little right before we came on. I didn't think the better team won, even despite the injuries. I'm just... Matt Ryan not showing up in a big spot today. I know one of the interceptions wasn't his fault. The end zone interception was horrific.
That was terrible.
And in general, it gets back to the point, he hasn't been the same guy this year. And I know that you could look at the tape and say, oh, he still makes these throws.
He's been solid.
This was
spectacular.
A huge game for this team. And he was a liability for large stretches of it, which if they have any chance, they got the win in this game, and he did throw that touchdown pass, and Matt Bryant, let's give him credit. You bang a 52-yard field goal on a 17-all game in December division football. That's a big kick there. But Matt Ryan's going to need to be better. Julio Jones had a nice game, but again, where is their connection in the red zone? Where are they making big game-deciding plays?
Yeah.
They need to be better. Not Julio as much, but Matt Ryan needs to be better than he was tonight. I was disappointed in his play.
He did need to be better, and I know you. Are you a fantasy owner of Matt Ryan? Is that a
I am a fantasy owner. A disappointed fantasy owner.
Yeah, and I don't blame you whatsoever. The defense has played better the last couple weeks, and I think the Saints offense.
I don't like the insinuation, by the way, but go on.
What? You're a little extra salty. You're right.
A little bit.
Terrible
but
game.
He's had, in general, the guy's on pace for 19 or 20 touchdowns. This is defending MVP of the league.
And Marshawn Lattimore, who I was all fired up to get back on the field tonight to watch him against Julio Jones, had a great battle with Jones for about a half. But the second half, he was sucking wind and, you know, getting oxygen on the sideline. I don't know. Maybe he hasn't really been able to practice or condition the last couple of weeks. He's been hurt. He's had an ankle injury, and he's just kind of been.
He was taking the oxygen tank when Matt Ryan threw his only touchdown.
Right, and really for most of that drive. So that was bad. But if I'm a Saints fan, I look at the way the second half played out, and I put it on the offense a little bit. You know, they got that 17-10 lead, which was set up by the defense, which was set up by a turnover. After that, they go four and out. Basically don't move the ball. The next drive, I believe they go three and out. The next drive after that is when Breeze ended up throwing the interception. It was actually four straight possessions where you don't put any – or three straight punts and then the interception to end the game. So this is an offensive team. Like their defense, which had most of the injuries, kept giving them a chance to kind of put the game away and they couldn't get it done.
And one more note from late in that game, that drive, the final drive, Dan Quinn got bailed out.
Oh my God.
By his linebacker because.
Terrible coaching all night by Dan Quinn. The end of the first half and then what you're about
to talk. Third and one. Surprisingly, it's third and half a yard. Surprisingly, the Saints call a pass incomplete, holding on the Saints. So they have the choice. Then Quinn had the choice of fourth and half a yard or third and 11. Deeper, it would have made it something like a 47 yard field goal, something in that range. And Quinn declined the penalty, and then Sean Payton said, oh, okay,
thanks.
I have onions. I've had onions my whole career. You should have known this. I'm going to sneak it on fourth and half a yard and sustain the drive, get a first down. So if Drew Brees acts more like Drew Brees and finishes off that drive and the Falcons' season ends, Dan Quinn's wearing goat horns.
Right.
So he got very lucky.
Absolutely. They let him off the hook. That was a very curious decision. They also didn't have anyone over the center on Breeze's sneak. It was, they were just giving him that yard, and then they set up the next play for Ted Ginn. It was all setting up, you're right, for Dan Quinn to get roasted. But Deion Jones saved the day.
No, he didn't get roasted. He won't get roasted. He survives. That was a good football game, Greg. It was fun.
I agree.
Let's have some more of those.
It felt like a December game between rivals, one of the best rivalries in the NFL, like a game that actually mattered. I think we're going to have a few more this week.
All right, so that is the Thursday night game. Now let's get into the rest of the Week 14 schedule. Here we go.
The Around the NFL podcast. Got a restraining order from Zach Morris.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
First of all, I wouldn't be getting, if there was any type of legal consequences for me admiring 1991 Zach Morris's bod, it would be Mark Paul Gosselaar that would be filing.
Right,
paperwork.
Not the character.
So right off the bat, I think Money's Lie is up in flames.
I'm with you. As someone who was born on the same exact day as Mario Lopez, same year.
Goosebumps moment.
I have sort of inside vibes to that show, and I don't think you're going to be sued by a character that no longer exists.
Mm. A.C. Slater's the same age as us?
Oh, yeah. Aged maybe potentially.
He looks a lot better than you and I.
Well, I agree.
He will pop up on, like, I'll come home from work and he's on one of those silly, like, late afternoon entertainment shows.
Extra, I believe.
Is it Extra? And it is. In, so you guys are 42, 43?
43. 44.
Really? You're 44?
Yeah. I look good for 44.
You do look good.
There's some guys who are 44 like look like they're 63 and on their last
It just
leg.
Surprised me. I think it's more that I'm surprised I've known you for so long.
I know. It does feel like a long time.
Anyway, Lopez, AC Slater, is like a 25-year-old man in actuality right now. That's who we should be. Forgot all this Tom Brady stuff. Let's see what Mario Lopez is up to.
Huge Chargers fan, by the way.
He seems to be the permanent host of the channel that you turn on in the hotel to tell you what the movies are.
Yeah.
That's also a show he's on.
What a gig.
This is the Thursday edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by Head & Shoulders. You heard off the top of the show, Greg and I breaking down the NFC South showdown between the Saints and Falcons. But so much more to get to. 15 more games, in fact, as we head toward the home stretch of the regular season. 4 games left for every team. And, Greg, what are you most excited about before we get into things about the final stretch of the season? What is the one subplot that you're really juiced about?
I'm just going to stick with this week. I like the fact that Jags, Seahawks, and what's the other game? Eagles, Rams are on at the same time. I mean, that is the best little afternoon of games we've had all season.
Good. That's fun. Before we get to the games, by the way, to the previews, I should say, let's start with some news.
Ladies and gentlemen, for 28 games only, Sashi.
So sad to see a good drop go, but that's the way it is in the NFL, the churn of the National Football League. Big changes for the Cleveland Browns. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport and NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported Thursday that the Browns have fired Executive Vice President of Football Operations Sashi Brown, according to a source that was later confirmed in a statement from Jimmy Haslam, the team owner. Haslam decided that they were going to get rid of Sashi and keep Hugh Jackson. Mark, we'll start with you on this. Where else would we start? First of all, are you sad to see the drop go? Because a lot of people were upset about the drop's loss.
Yeah, I think the drop is, that was one of our more flavorful drops. And anytime you lose the voice of Alex Fragola off the show, big loss for all of us and the listeners.
Yeah, that's very true. And now the Browns, Mark, your thoughts on this decision to keep Hugh Jackson in the building. No matter what, they've decided, Haslam said, they're going to move forward in 2018 with him, but not Sashi.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Cleveland, since they've come back in 1999, have probably had roughly 242 versions of an in-house war between coaching staff X and fill in the blank front office. And this is the latest incarnation. And this round went to a coach in Hugh Jackson that I'm not sure has shown anything more than the front office has. And I don't know how either side of this can claim any sort of a victory. Hugh Jackson in his press conference, he lost some points with me. He talked about the fact that, you know, how much he got along with Sashi Brown, how this had nothing to do with issues between his faction and the front office faction. I don't think anyone can watch that and watch what's happened this season and believe a single word of it. He is lucky that he's been retained, but he now the pressure falls on him, and it sounds like John Dorsey, we don't know, but he's the name that Ian's mentioned multiple times, is bubbling up. He's out there.
Former Chiefs
General GM.
Manager.
Has a chance to come in and take that role, and I would imagine that someone as experienced as John Dorsey would have many coaches that he'd think about wanting to pair himself with, not necessarily be paired out of the gate. We'll see what happens.
I don't necessarily believe that Hugh Jackson is the coach next year, even though
today
in a statement. They put in a statement. They've said a lot of things in a statement, like they would be patient with Sashi Brown. They didn't do that.
Well, the most disturbing part of this for me is, when is the owner going to stop making football decisions? With Johnny Manziel, Kyle Shanahan wanted Garoppolo or Derek Carr. They commissioned a $100,000 study that said Teddy Bridgewater, and the owner decided Johnny Manziel. The owner also messed up the A.J. McCarron fiasco by stepping in and trying to go with what his head coach wanted to overpay for a backup quarterback. And now he's stepping in and saying, I'm keeping a 1-27 head coach, when the next GM might not want to keep that head coach. When is the owner going to stop making football decisions?
Mark made the point that a touchstone of this Browns reincarnation has been warring factions between front office and coaching staff. Well, a lot of times when you put a coach and a general manager together that they didn't come in together, you're asking for trouble. So if you does stick around, that is the situation. Now, will the GM be able to work with you? Because the last GM or whatever role title they gave to Sashi couldn't.
And think about Jimmy Haslam since he's been on board. You know, he pushed Holmgren, Heckert, and Shermer out the door when he got there. That makes sense. Since then, he's now hired and fired Chud, Mike Lombardi, Joe Banner, Mike Pettine, Ray Farmer, and Sashi Brown. That's a long list for 4 years. It's only been four years. That's a long list.
It's ridiculous.
For 4 years. And I don't know. The word was that Mary Kay Cabot said that they hadn't even spoken in a month, Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown. So you do wonder, like, is Dee Podesta going to go? Or are they going to flush out the entire front office? Because the rest of it kind of doesn't make sense.
I don't wonder that. The first thing the new GM is going to do is send Paul Dee Podesta packing.
Yeah, and on the whole analytics thing, and I get that it's been a target for a lot of, playful derision from people. I get it. The results are not there. But the thing is with it, they did on one angle, what they did do is what Sashi Brown and company and Ray and Hugh Jackson inherited was utter garbage. And I think where the issue came started was when Sashi Brown decided to dump a bunch of veterans out of the gate, and it put Hugh Jackson.
Some good ones too.
And some guys they were never going to re-sign under any situation. They were not going to stay in Cleveland. But the whole analytics thing, which would have probably taken a longer time than two seasons to really net its full result, is flushed out, because I think, number one, this isn't like the Rand Corporation where you have people in the shadows trying to like find experimental
ways to do society.
Love that
Rand Corporation comes up
society.
Once every month.
It's the NFL. You go 1-27, we're going to flush a bunch of old boys back in and do it the other way.
But you said you don't know if Hugh's done a better job than Sashi or not. The front office has clearly done a much better job than the coaching. They have all those picks coming up. Yes, they've missed on the quarterbacks, but they've done a pretty good job improving the talent overall. This is an underachieving team. So if I had to choose one, I would be more excited about the direction the front office has taken.
They've given the next crew a much better team to inherit, but people cannot, and nor should they necessarily, they cannot get over whoever's in fault for this. And it's the whole group, I think, passing over Carson Wentz, and you can tack on Deshaun Watson for the Browns and a bunch of other teams too.
It's a fireable offense. One of the tenets of football analytics is we have very little predictive ability when it comes to early round picks on quarterbacks, so let's just not pick those quarterbacks. And, you know, as David Letterman said about Peyton Manning a couple of months ago, this guy changed the skyline of Indianapolis. That's what generational franchise quarterbacks do, and Carson Wentz is the most valuable asset in the NFL right now. No player is more valuable than Carson Wentz. And you messed it up. You messed up Deshaun Watson because your analytics told you you couldn't predict them.
It's telling that this is about the 14th time on this podcast that we've had to have a roundtable about how Cleveland screwed something up. It's every 6 or 7 months we're having this conversation on the show.
And this is now, and Mark, you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. This is the most... Part of the reason why I'm okay with them firing Sasha. If they didn't believe in him, get rid of him. Keeping Hugh around is where I'm a little confused in the sense that he's supposed to be a QB guru, a guy that has instincts for that position. And yes, Wentz and Watson went out the door, or never came in the door, I should say. This now becomes the most important draft in Cleveland Browns history. And they've had three chances to secure a generational franchise type quarterback, and they whiffed. They blew the first two chances. So this becomes most likely, and what people believe is another good QB draft. If they don't get this right, and I know they're going to probably pick a quarterback, but if they don't get the right quarterback, it will represent one of the most titanic swings and misses over a three-year stretch that you've ever seen in professional sports. If they come out of this with no quarterback, they're 0-2, and they get one more shot at this, and we'll see what happens.
The next GM is set up in a plum position to control drafts. But, you know, Sam Hinkie isn't the GM of the 76ers anymore. He's not benefiting from Ben Simmons.
Trust the process. Yeah.
Right. If Sashi's picks work out, you know who benefits is Jim Haslam, the owner, who has been a prominent part in two of the bigger football stories over the last week. I mean, he is the guy in terms of the University of Tennessee booster situation and their head coach over the last week. And you look at what's happened in the Browns, like, Not good situations, and there's some commonalities. Yep. There.
All right, so there you go. That's the latest from Brownsville. Does anybody call it Brownsville? I don't know.
I mean, I think there are other names for it.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. That's what's going on with Cleveland. Let's now move into the Week 14 matchups, and let us start. Where else would you start? But Orchard Park, Mark Sessler. we go left to right on the Thursday show, and the Buffalo Bills are still in the playoff mix in the AFC. Need a win, though. Got to get a W. 6-6. Luckily, they got the Colts coming to town, and the Colts have lost three in a row. Is Tyrod Taylor playing, number one? Let's start there. What is the latest update with the quarterback?
The people who watched, you know, the portion of practice that the reporters are allowed to, talked about still noticeable evidence of a limp to some degree. And he really was in bad shape at the end of that Patriots game. So, but he's there, and if it continues, I'm going to go under the assumption that Tyrod Taylor plays. Maybe you lose some of his mobility, but what I'd say watching that Colts-Jaguars game, that the Bills right here are 6-6. You're resting just outside the fringe of the playoff picture. You've got a chance right here to go in and knock out a team that looked utterly lost against the Jaguars to me. Outside of a deep strike late in the game to T.Y. Hilton, they couldn't get anything done on offense. And the Bills, to counter, I know they lost to New England 23-3. I blame their offense quite much for that loss because their defense controlled that game for 2.5 quarters. But you have to actually produce on offense, and you can't expect to do that for 4 quarters against New England. You can against the Colts. They could be 7-6 after this and in better position.
What does Tyrod Taylor give you if he's not able to run? I mean, that's a recipe.
I would say this, more than Nathan Peterman.
I disagree totally, and I thought Tony Romo did a great job of breaking this down, that there's no element of anticipation when Tyrod Taylor is the quarterback. He doesn't make anticipatory throws. Peterman comes in and you see quick, decisive throws right off the bat. Now, his decision-making is questionable, but the upgrade from Taylor to Peterman on anticipatory throws was quite
evident. I will give you this. Tyrod Taylor does not turn the ball over.
Right. Well, the decision-making is a factor, but the offense doesn't run when Tyrod Taylor can't run.
I think it's also fair to ask if that Nate Peterman that makes those type of throws, I'm not going to say the word, Wes. I don't think I can do it. Anticipatory. Nailed it. Is that guy going to be the guy that gets on the field after what happened in his first game? Mentally, will he still have the gumption to make those type of throws?
He had a really nice drive against the Patriots.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's crazy the Bills will be right in the mix, possibly, especially if the Ravens lose this week at 7-6. Any team should beat the Colts right now.
And by the way, if the Bills do take care of business, and they better for that fan base, they would move to 7-6, as Mark said. They got two games left against the Dolphins, who are one of the worst teams in the AFC, a home and home there, sandwiched by a Patriots matchup. if you, let's say you lose against the Pats, you should win those other three games, and then you're 9-7, and I think you got a chance.
You got a chance. Put Jordan Matthews on injured reserve this week. Put Shaq Lawson, who was starting on
injured
reserve,
so
they got problems. And before we move on, since you guys missed it on Sunday, a final congratulations to old Frank Gore, who passed
yes.
LaDainian Tomlinson to be in the top five all time.
I was going to say something Russian. Snarky, like, we didn't miss it, and just like, whatever. But no, that wouldn't be that would be disrespectful.
That wouldn't be true.
NFL.com/Frank Gore
Oh, no, I don't care about that. I'm saying that's an achievement.
Greg's long
two Thursdays in a row we're going to mention.
The one good thing about this Colts, he was the only thing that could move the ball on the Jaguars.
All right, let's move on to a really solid matchup. The Minnesota Vikings 10-2. They have not lost, gentlemen, since the first day of October. So this is a nice season for the Vikings. They now travel to Carolina to face the Panthers. This is a very tricky spot, Wes, for the Panthers, who stumbled last week against the Saints. No big sin. But if they cannot find a way to beat the Vikings at home, they put themselves in a very dangerous position to miss the playoffs entirely.
Yeah, my instincts initially were Carolina on a grass field playing at home in a game they need. I tend to give the edge to them. And then I looked deeper into this game. Cam Newton, I believe, is 1-4 against top 15 defense.
Yes, that's
right. He has not played well against good defenses.
Passer rating of 61.
The Vikings lead the NFL in third down offense and third down defense. No team in history since that stat has been invented has ever done that. This is a well-balanced,
is that good?
Well-coached team. And to me, the Vikings are clearly the better team right now. I think you have to give the edge to them, even at Carolina.
It's not even close. I mean, what has the Panthers done really recently to get everyone excited? It was basically the Dolphins beatdown that they had on national television. Everyone beats down the Dolphins. They did not play well against the Jets, were a little lucky to win that game, and did not play their best game in New Orleans at all. That was a one-sided game. Like, the Vikings are the same team week after week. At some point, we just have to trust it.
I feel like if I had to pick who's the paper tiger in these NFC playoff teams, I'm with you guys in terms of the Panthers. I don't like the way they played for large portions of the season, and the last 2 weeks especially, they've seen flaw that, and they did when they beat up on the Dolphins. It happened in prime time, and that helps the shade view sometimes, but they also kind of had that swagger going, and it kind of reminded you of 2015, but we haven't seen that since they came back from the bye.
I feel like I came out of that game and I was saying this, and I think that maybe I've believe this way too soon. Oh, that they found this identity.
Well, they ran the ball well twice in a row,
and it came after this. And it came after the Saints game the day before, where they were blowing people up on the ground. And I thought the Saints do it every week. You just can't trust the Panthers week to week. I mean, only Flacco and Mariota have a lower quarterback rating than Cam Newton amongst teams with a winning record, and it shows with Cam Newton too often.
And this is a tough matchup. I mean, Funchess is not 100%, and he's going to get Xavier Rhodes traveling around with him. You know, Greg Olsen is maybe coming back in this game, but he hasn't really been himself. They don't really have something to lean on their offense. And so it's just counting on their defense to win a game for them, which is possible against Minnesota, but it's going to be tough.
Here's one last stat on Case Keenum, who has had such an excellent season. We've talked about him a lot, but he deserves all the pub he's getting. He's ever since Teddy Bridgewater got healthy, and everyone was saying, oh, we should put Teddy Bridgewater in. He's a great story. In the last four games, Keenum has had a pass rating north of 100, completion percentage north of 70. That's over four games. The only quarterbacks in the Super Bowl era with a longer streak than a single season, Peyton, Favre, Russell Wilson, and Alex Smith. So talk about raising your game when you get challenged as a competitor.
Yeah, and people
love that.
People don't talk about their ground game. They're the second best running back duo in the league right now.
Yeah, everybody thought when Dalvin Cook was.
Oh,
they
it's
were
how can you possibly get over it?
And they're not even like Latavius Murray. To me, it's not the second best duo. It's the second best running game. Like, they could put anyone on in that running game and do what Latavius Murray did. He to me is a replacement.
That's what they couldn't do last year, though. That offensive line last year is the reason they went from 5-0 to the abyss. It's the opposite this year.
Well, all the Mike Zimmer for Coach of the Year. That's fine. I think to me, McVay clearly is the choice, but Rick Spielman deserves a lot of credit for this roster and for being able to plug in a McKinnon and Murray when Dalvin Cook goes down, because he rebuilt the offensive line.
You on GM corner?
I am on GM corner. Rick Spielman has done a great job with this roster.
Talk about a guy with nine lives. There have been times when people wanted Rick Spielman out of there, and he's survived a lot of coaching changes.
This is the game that Packers and Cowboys fans got to be kind of circling, because they got to feel like the Panthers falling off are their chance to jump into that playoffs. Well, it's going to be easier than the Seahawks.
The Packers are the pack of wolves, and the Cowboys and the Panthers are that injured caribou right now.
Ouch.
And if you guys are just looking for a little mental image, Wes, pair of blue jeans, black boots, bomber jacket, collar, popped, aviators. Like George Michael, Faith era aviators. Leaning up against the corner, the street sign, GM corner. And then he takes out a cigarette, which he shouldn't because you're recovering.
Yeah, it's not a good idea.
And then takes one of those matchsticks against his scruff, lights it on his cheek, lights up the cigarette, then puts it out.
This is like more like a 1963 picture of what
yeah, you're describing a man that doesn't exist in our society right now.
Well, until you go to GM Corner, that's all I'm saying. It's a very masculine place. Let's move on. The Chicago Bears, 3-9, could not find a way to beat Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners at home, and they can't beat anybody anymore. They haven't won in 6 weeks. They travel to Cincinnati. We could be quick on this one, Greg, because the Bengals, for all intents and purposes, ended their season with their failure to close out the Steelers at home on Monday night, right?
Most likely. This is a game that should be a good matchup for them. Andy Dalton can deliver when protected, and the Bears have no pass rush. Gio Bernard maybe going to win some fantasy leagues for people this weekend. Going to be the starter, most likely, with Joe Mixon looking like he's out. Other than that, I don't know what's to get excited about. Trubisky can't shoot straight right now from the pocket. Can throw on the move. He can't shoot straight from the pocket. And a guy that's supposed to be very accurate, kind of that's his calling card, that's a little concerning.
Get him a coaching staff.
I think he's regressed a little bit, but this is a dead man walking game. And you guys were talking about the hot seat the other day. And Marvin Lewis, I think, I've always said, and Dan, I appreciate you taking on my viewpoint.
I tried. Yeah, did I have it right? Or close?
I've changed just in the past few weeks. And if you listen closely on Monday Night Football, Gruden and McDonough alluded to them talking to Marvin Lewis and Marvin Lewis strongly insinuating that he will not be back, that the last few weeks are going to be his last few weeks with this organization.
And yet I think they'll win this game. I mean, to your point, Greg, they had Trubisky throw the ball 7 times last week. He's averaging 14.1 passing yards per drive.
I mean, they got
that's ridiculous.
They got a punt return touchdown, and they got the ball almost in the red zone on a turnover against the 49ers. Those are their two and they still can't beat the 49ers.
I mean, they need Tariq Cohen to do something every week. It was special teams last week, or it needs to be something, a big breakaway touchdown. That's the only way they win these games.
Let's move on. The Green Bay Packers travel to
First Energy Stadium, I believe, is the name.
Did you put a T in
isn't
the word Energy?
Isn't it like Entergy? Isn't it like one of those corpo?
I don't believe so.
Entergy is another stadium.
See, that's what I'm saying. But it is something out there floating in the corpo.
I'll never forget when Wes and I were younger, when they changed randomly out of nowhere, because you didn't have Twitter and all that stuff back then, that Candlestick Park became 3Com Park out of nowhere one Sunday morning, and people were like, wait, what?
Yeah,
it was
the
first corporate naming change, and people were, they were offended.
Because
it was ridiculous.
The Stick was one of the best names. And then, does anybody remember the late 90s incarnation when it was Monster Stadium or Monster Park?
Monster.com.
Monster.com.
It was Monster Park for a brief time as well. Stupid corporations.
Tough.
Love working for the NFL, though. The Browns are the team that plays at First Energy Field. The 0-12 Browns. We talked about them at the top of the show. They have 4 chances to get a W and avoid infamy, but the Packers really have something to play for. If they can get a W here, Mark, they move to 7-6 with Aaron Rodgers warming up on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, this is all you wanted out of this Green Bay team if you're a fan, is to see them have a chance to get Aaron Rodgers back while they were still alive. They very much have a chance that they do that. I look at the 2 quarterbacks in this game as, you know, they're both costing their team points, yardage. So let's say they erase each other. You're the Green Bay Packers.
I'd
your job. For here and there. But beyond all that, I just think that without one holding a big advantage over the other, it is Green Bay's roster against Cleveland's. If you're a playoff team, you should be able to beat Cleveland's roster, whether it's in Cleveland or Green Bay. If Cleveland is this disastrous of an organization, the storied Green Bay Packers who want to be a playoff team, some have any value beyond Aaron Rodgers, better take care of Cleveland on Sunday.
Well, they're clearly not a playoff team without Aaron Rodgers. They're 2-5. And even with Aaron Rodgers, they didn't top 370 yards in a game. So Aaron Rodgers was holding them up. And to me, this is a toss-up. Like, we on NFL Pick'em, here's a spoiler. I took the old Browns to win this game. Why not?
Been a lot of that lately.
You got to win.
People think the Browns are going to get off the
schneid. Then what do we think of Green Bay? I understand.
I think they're one of the worst teams in the league with Brett Hundley as the – they're 2-5, and they were extremely lucky to win one of the second game last.
I mean, the logic is there. Like, yeah, I'm with you. I think the Packers are like a rank 23rd to 27th in the power rankings team with Brett Hundley. I think they're that limited with him
at best.
And so if you put him on the road, even if it's against the Browns, you can't assume.
Well, the road doesn't mean anything in Cleveland outside the fact that you have to get on an airplane.
There is a road. Yeah, they are on the road.
Your schedule is a little different.
Yeah.
So you put him on the road against a team that's won like what 4% of its games,
right?
In the last 2 years, I mean, the Packers should be the clear favorites here, and I get it. So they're the 23rd best team in the league, which is a lot better than being the 32nd best team in the league, and they found some interesting running backs in Green Bay. They will not have to address that position in 2000.
What's funny, we went into the season, that was the big conversation. Like, what are they going to do at running back? Now here we are in week 14. Like,
Jamal Williams.
That's the only thing they have. Like, that was the reason they won.
Well, Williams was the offseason darling, and then he wasn't in the picture, and now he's back in.
What were we going to say, Wes?
He's looked great the past 2 weeks as a power back, and you throw in Aaron Jones, who looked great before he got injured. Ty Montgomery's out for the year. I wonder what his role is going to be next year. But I think Williams and Jones make for a great tandem.
All right, so the Packers, if they can get to 7-6, the NFC playoff picture gets that much more juicy. Let's move on. This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best heated clothing. That's right, heated clothing powered by, oh yeah, you know it, baby, rechargeable batteries. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. Action Heat clothing provides warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even underpants. You could stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. We've got a special deal for listeners. 15% off your entire order. Just go to action-heat.com/around. To check out everything Action Heat has to offer, that's action-heat.com/around, or use the coupon code AROUND at checkout to save 15%. Stay warm this winter with Action Heat, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Greg, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas, heated underpants.
Ooh, yeah.
And now this. From number one New York Times best-selling author James Rollins comes the thrilling new novel, The Demon, Crown. Crown went on to the second line, so I missed it there, but I got it. To save mankind's future, the members of Cygna Force must make a devil's bargain. Follow along as they join forces with their most hated enemy to stop... Greg? An ancient threat, often compared to Clive Cussler in Michael Crichton's best, this book combines real science and history with cutting-edge military action, and who doesn't love that during the holiday season? It's a great place to join in on the wildly successful Sigma 4 series. Get started with videos, audio, and more at jamesrollins.com. Back to the show. Up next, the San Francisco 49ers. They just picked up their second win of the season with Jimmy G behind center. And now a tougher assignment, but not that much tougher. Nice setup for Jimmy G to start his career. They go to Houston to face the Texans, two teams that are out of the mix. Your thoughts on this game, Wes?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Jimmy Garoppolo play again. And I never really understood the skepticism of Jimmy Garoppolo. Especially the people that say, look what Matt Castle did outside of that system. First of all, I don't even know what the Patriots system is. If somebody can explain to me what their quote-unquote system is, I'd like to hear it. But Jimmy Garoppolo is not the same quarterback as Matt Castle, and what Castle did has nothing to do with Jimmy G. You're talking about a guy who has, whenever he's played, shown great pocket mobility, a lightning-quick release, good decision-making, good comeback capability. He's everything you want to see in a young quarterback, and I don't get any kind of the skepticism around him. If you want to say small sample size, fine, but not the Matt Castle stuff. That stuff's garbage.
It's funny because 2 games ago when he came in late and he generated a touchdown drive, I thought to myself, you know, going into last week, well, I can't hang my hat on that. Even though there was energy around that, the offense took on a different form. But then against the Bears, I think it was the first game all year, they're dialing up 12, 13 plus plays to 10 plus yards, most all of them through the air. It's all because of him. They are a completely different type of team to watch. Everything that we heard about him and what we thought, we said, oh, Bill Belichick thinks X, Y, and Z. Well, we had to see it. It came to fruition last week, and it is such a different team. And I don't care if you're playing at home or on the road. I didn't have a problem locking that one team up last week, so I have no problem locking up a two team this week. Lock it up!
Love it.
I love it. Any right, chance to lock,
I'm riding this team against, into the sunset.
That, Ian Rappaport, this is your
or the seller,
team.
One of the one
new,
or the other.
Your new team. Ian Rappaport said people in the building kind of compared Garoppolo to Tony Romo, which I can see a little bit.
Bruce Arians made that comparison a year ago, which,
and I know they played at the same school, so maybe that's just what you're thinking. But I can
both
see
last
that.
Names end with the same letter.
I can see that. It
and the first names.
Some of the things I liked about him were just there. Just like the headiness, like the second that he got hit late on a play, he's immediately like, he knows he was out of bounds and he's calling for the flag. They had a questionable catch at one point and he quickly brings up everyone to get the next playoff. Like that to me shows almost like a calm in what you're doing. Like he's very much in control of what's going on around him, which is really impressive for a guy who's barely played at the NFL level. They were 5 of 10 in 3rd and 8 or longer last week.
Yeah,
those are all like tight window throws. I mean, he was about as exciting as he could have been.
Yeah, and if you're just looking at the box score, like, oh, he had an interception, that was not his fault at all. And he had this incredible touchdown pass to George Kittle at the end of the game that got pulled away by flag. It would have been one of the highlights of the week. The throw was beautiful. The catch was great.
I think there's like the skepticism on him also extended to, okay, that's great. He learned at the knee of Tom Brady. He was there with Belichick and McDaniels. But does that really translate? And tangibly, it translated to the game-winning drive, and he credited what he learned from Brady. Brady's the greatest one-minute drill quarterback in NFL history.
Right, even just the fact they started the game in no huddle. I mean, to me, that just says he's got some of the parts of the quarterback position which are the toughest right off the gate.
Moving on, a big matchup in the AFC West, the 6-6 Oakland Raiders, who have won two straight to get themselves back in the mix. And why are they back in the mix? Because the Chiefs can't stop losing, riding now a 4-game losing streak, 6 of 7 overall after that bitter loss at the Meadowlands to the Jets. They won't have Marcus Peters in this game, by the way, the cornerback who fired the penalty flag into the crowd and then went in the locker room, even though he wasn't ejected, and then ran back on the field and he wasn't wearing socks anymore, which I still think is one of my favorite moments of the season. The Chiefs suspended him, not the league. The Chiefs did, so he won't be in this game. Feels like it all sets up for a nice game for Derek Carr, Greg, especially if Amari Cooper's in the mix.
It should. Amari Cooper did not practice on Thursday. He will get Michael Crabtree back, but Cooper, who passed the concussion protocol, still is dealing with an ankle injury, so that's a problem. But everyone throws on the Chiefs, and everyone throws on the Chiefs with Marcus Peters in the lineup. So you better be able to throw on the Chiefs this week. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of an offensive identity with Marshawn Lynch, who's run better for sure ever since he had that suspension. I think he's run really well. This is a game I'm going to be curious to see how the Raiders' defense looks. Since they made the change to John Pagano, they've had their best two defensive performances probably of the year against two really terrible offenses. So it hasn't been a great test. But John Pagano is a guy who's very experienced, has had some good runs as a defensive coordinator in San Diego, and maybe his upgrade from Ken Norton is enough to at least make this team respectable.
Maybe. They have one of the worst pass defenses in NFL history.
Right. And then they've played fine the last 2 weeks against terrible teams, and so it's tough to tell. But they were a team that was making everyone look good.
I thought I was going to be more impressed with the Chiefs' offense after watching the Jets game. But it was really just 5 or 6 big plays and right. No sustaining element whatsoever in that offense. If they don't hit those big plays and you can't rely on hitting them, what do they hang their hat on off?
That's what they were early in the season. The Andy Reid firing himself bit kind of worked, though. The second he fired himself, they went nuts.
It's the most depressing division in football.
But it's fun, isn't it? It's like it's a race.
No.
This was the game of the year, by the way, the first time.
The fun team is the Chargers. There's nothing fun in my book about the idea that this Raiders team is going to be in the playoffs. And frankly,
I don't think
there's something even worse about the fact that the Chiefs, who mystified us for 5 weeks with this reborn attack and this newfound confidence are back where they are at 6-6. You're probably going to sneak into this AFC West division title if you don't get nipped by someone else. And you're going to bumped in the playoffs as one of the most tedious repeating storylines of the past 5 or 6 years. And I'm tired.
You have to beat your Chargers to do it, though.
Yeah. Are you in or out of the Chargers?
I think the Chargers are going to win the division.
All right. So what are you worried about?
The fact that we're excited about this game.
This was the game of the...
These are crappy teams.
This was maybe the game... I would say the game of the year when these two teams played.
Well,
I know
it
didn't have,
time ago.
It didn't have the most important, you know, impact on the season, but the game of the year.
Well, we have 12 games of the year by now. That was not the game of the year in my book.
That's number one to me, and it stayed there. And then and last year they played great games in primetime too.
These are not two great teams, but they're two desperate teams, two teams fighting for a playoff spot, two old rivals. Give me the game. I want the game, Mark. You hate the game?
It's yours.
The game. Give me the game.
You have it. It's happening. You can experience it. Go experience
it. Give it to me.
What happened to their defensive line? Like, it used to be a good group. It's mostly the same players, and they're just going to get pushed around.
What happened to Kareem Hunt, by the way? I had actually, watching the game last week against the Jets, he had a big reception to keep a drive going late in the game, and I had forgotten that he was even involved with the game, or it was a member of the Chiefs. This is a guy that was
he's still one of the NFL
running away
in yards from scrimmage. He's third. If you looked at his numbers, you would say that's your rookie of the year because his per carry, per catch, total numbers. I don't think he is the rookie of the year.
No.
I think it's Alvin Kamara, but I think it's the offensive
it's
line.
It's all before the leaves came off the trees, though.
Well, yeah. If you like, it struck me the difference between the Jets' run blocking and the Chiefs' run blocking last week. Bilal Powell and Matt Forte were running through bigger holes.
Let's move on to the NFC East, where the Cowboys are 6-6, a huge win last Thursday against the Redskins to kind of get their feet under them after a three-game losing streak. Now they travel to the Meadowlands to face the Giants. Geno Smith, of course, as we know, is back in the lineup. And, Mark, let's start with this. One person that...
Eli Manning, you mean, rather.
What did I say? Your boy?
Geno. I mean, it's tough to...
Sorry, you were wish-casting that. Yeah. You were hoping
it's
that...
It's tough to get a legend like Geno out of your mind, because when you think New York Giants football, you think Geno.
By the way, Geno's made headlines twice since Sunday.
Shocking.
Once for calling Rex Ryan a coward, like, right after the game, after his performance on Sunday. And then yesterday, that he was miffed and upset that he had been removed from his starting role. Sit down, be humble.
For once.
Be lucky you're getting a paycheck,
This is an exact example of why he gets picked on. Because if you heard what he said...
He's a knucklehead.
Of course, as a competitor, I was upset, but I totally support the decision, and like I respect
what
you.
About,
Eli,
what about the Rex Ryan's a coward thing?
That was unnecessary. There's no need for
I'm just saying
Ryan
this
stuff.
Is true. If it was anyone else, we wouldn't care.
You are a PR mouthpiece for the biggest nincompoop in football.
Rex Ryan is a coward.
All right, calm down. You know, just because we went into the Foxborough in January 2011 and shocked the world.
Everybody's going to be
still hanging that on Rex. Leave him alone.
Everybody's going to be shocked next year when nobody signs Geno, and it's because of this stuff.
Yep. Anyway, let's get back on track here. Eli Manning's the quarterback. What I was going to say, Mark, was Alfred Morris has been pretty damn good as the running back of the Cowboys. He's got a couple more games in that role. Are you feeling much better about them now?
They had their best game on the ground last week. And
huge holes.
I mean, the Redskins, to me, feel like a completely different operation from week to week, so I don't know always what to make of the results against that team. But Dallas seemingly figured out their issues in that game, at least. It's a team that knows them well. The Giants, too, too. Let me ask you a question. I know this is absurd. The Giants are allowing 400 yards per game on defense. The defense of last year, but they're down some guys. I get it. You've made the coaching switch. You're at home. You got Eli Manning, for all his flaws and virtues, back on the field. This Giants fan
game.
Has something. This Giants fan group has something to believe in.
Steve Spagnuolo on the sideline.
Reason to believe that this is a little bit of a trap game for the Cowboys?
Absolutely.
Sure.
The Cowboys, to me, they can win games if their offensive line just wins games for them. But I don't think they're that much better than the Giants. I mean, as an overall team right now without Zeke Elliott. I mean, they're a middle-of-the-road team. The Giants are a little unlucky to be 2-10. They're a bad team, but I don't think the Giants should be heavy underdogs in this game, and I don't think they are.
Greg would know.
That's
true.
Yeah, that's true. The Cowboys should win the game, though.
Your season's on the line. What is New York playing for, other than all this sort of ephemeral nonsense in the air about trying to have some sort of nice end to your season?
Right. I'm with you.
I'm wondering if the, you know, they felt like they found something in the secondary, the Cowboys. So if that's a trend that Awuzie and Frazier, these two rookies who played really well on Thursday night, if that becomes like a weekly occurrence, that could be something, especially going up against Evan Ingram. I mean, that's the thing. The next,
ooh, Ingram's looking good.
I love Evan Ingram, and I love Sterling Shepard, and of course I love Odell Beckham. It's like whoever's going to be quarterbacking and coaching this team next year, you got some great weapons to play with.
DeMarcus,
I don't think it's going to be Eli Manning. I think this is the last couple games of Eli Manning.
DeMarcus Lawrence could blow this game up, by the way.
Sure.
As he's been doing all season. Moving on. Excuse me. The Detroit Lions, 6-6. Oh, no. Again, the Lions, you start to believe in the Lions, and then they lose two games. They're back to 6-6. They got Matt Stafford. Practice today, he's got the bad hand. You could expect him to be on the field. Be surprised if he isn't. And they go to Tampa, and this seems, Wes, like a great matchup. If Stafford can throw the ball, if he can grip the ball and do Matt Stafford throwing things, he's probably going to have a nice day against this Tampa Bay defense.
Oh, you meant great matchup as in?
As in for him to succeed.
Yeah, for
to keep their playoff
a recipe for success facing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Certainly not like this is an exciting matchup. Yeah. I like that AFC West crap fest. This one cannot get behind
in the glorious sunlight of that hideous stadium down in Tampa Bay. Sit back and enjoy this well-oiled matchup.
How many games in the last 2 years?
Well-oiled matchup.
Does the Lions offense move the ball before garbage time or before the fourth quarter when they go no huddle and Stafford goes hurry up? I just don't trust this offense in the first three quarters of any game.
And I don't trust this defense in all four quarters. I mean, they have made Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco was reborn when he played the Lions. Although a lot of them were great throws, to his credit. Mitchell Trubisky had his best game against the Lions. DeShon Kizer had basically his best game against the Lions. This is one of the worst defenses in the league. All they really have is Stafford in the passing game because we know they can't run the ball. They're 4 of 12 on 3rd-and-1 this year, which is an insane stat. It just that to me tells you so much about their team. It's all Stafford carrying them, and I kind of feel like their season's going to end here in Tampa. Hmm. Just for the law of averages.
Why don't you lock it up?
Throw it.
I'm not going to lock it up.
Why don't you do like a soft lock where you just put like a chair behind the door?
My locks are...
The door opens from the other way, too.
All my locks are soft.
Abbott Costello routine.
I kind of don't see that happening for Detroit. I think they're going to take care of business here. They still have the Bears and Bengals after this. In theory, they could go on a little bit of a run. And if we don't like Detroit's defense, I don't know what to like about Tampa Bay's. They're an absolute sieve through the air. They can't rush the passer. After losing Noah Spence, there's zero pass rush there. And you're basically going to get two or three plays a game from Jameis Winston that are going to undermine the offense as well at this point. So I don't know. I mean, at least the Lions, you get Marvin Jones going. Maybe it's late in the game, like you're saying, Wes. I just see them taking
Marvin Jones is an idiot.
Well, I don't know if he...
The Bucks got to...
Talk about another sound drop we're going to lose in a couple weeks.
One of the more surprisingly... poor players this year has been Doug Martin. I've been really surprised at how he has not kind of come through for them. They were a lot better off last week without him, with Peyton Barber.
Peyton Barber ran well, and
Martin will be back this week. I wonder if he'll even get to start for the team anymore.
It's a good question. What's his future there? Glover
it's
Quinn,
done because he's one of the higher paid running backs in the league. I don't think
Glover Quinn. Good. You can besmirch the Lions'
he's
defense
awesome.
All you want, but he's having an All Pro year.
Yeah.
Moving on, the Tennessee Titans. How about this? They've won 6 of 7. They're 8-4. They're not blowing anybody away, but 8-4 is 8-4 is 8-4, and that's tied for first in the AFC South. And now they travel to Arizona to face the 5-7 Cardinals, who kind of ran out of juice, it seemed, in a 32-16 loss to the Rams last week. Your thoughts on this matchup, Greg Rosenthal?
I just want to see the Titans passing game not be so limited, but it is. We're into week 14, and they really haven't integrated Corey Davis, their rookie. They really haven't consistently had Tywan Taylor. Eric Decker, I think it's safe to say either they're not using him well or he's kind of been a disappointment for them. Jonnu Smith, their rookie tight ends, kind of come and go. Like when they lost Rishard Matthews last week, it was like they didn't know what to do. And they're probably without Delanie Walker this week, it sounds like. Matthews will be back, Walker's out, and it's just... I don't know. It's like the league kind of figured out what they were doing last year, and Malarkey doesn't have a move to pivot to.
I'm going to throw the Titans a bone.
Okay, do it.
I feel like we picked on them quite a bit. Three things. DeMarco Murray looked much better
this
week.
Yeah, he did.
Delanie Walker, one of the best free agent signings of the past decade and an absolute Pro Bowler. He was complaining this week that he doesn't get enough credit. He absolutely should get credit. And the third thing, Marcus Mariota has made strides in some specific areas. He has been a really good two-minute drill quarterback this year, which is a very important part of the quarterback job.
They have, I think, four or five fourth-quarter comebacks. He leads the NFL in it, and he played one of his best games of the season last week. It was totally clean, ran very well. He did his job totally a week ago, so hopefully he can keep that going.
You know, if we're throwing the Titans some bones, you know, they won 6 out of 7. It's the NFL.
Every,
it's not easy to do that.
Every time Delanie Walker makes a play, my son, also named Walker, just hears it and goes, "Walker." Well, you know, he's all very excited. So that
you're playing Titans film on a loop in your house. I think that's reason for concern. The one thing about the Cardinals, they couldn't do much against the Rams. I'm not in love with Blaine Gabbert, but Kerwin Williams and the way they ran, that was quite a show. I mean,
he was running through gaping holes.
Absolutely. They shut it down in the second half to some degree, but I just know with Blaine Gabbert, I don't get it with this idea that he's going to be signed as a starter somewhere unless he's got a lot around him and like essentially that ground game. What is he going to do besides give you athletic, mobile quarterback play himself?
He's good enough to get you fired or just good.
Yeah, I don't know what the – it's not a long-term plan guy.
Titans run defense has been stonewalling teams too. So
good.
That has been an improved run defense.
And one last note, Larry Fitzgerald with 26 receiving yards will move past Randy Moss for third all time in most receiving yards, and he's 10 catches away from becoming the third player in NFL history.
Having a great year.
1,200 catches. He's, again, on pace for about 100 catches this year in what's been a limited offense with quarterback issues. He's pretty amazing.
John Brown and J.J. Nelson don't combine for the production that Larry Fitzgerald has had this year.
He's on my Mount Rushmore of players I've enjoyed watching in my life.
Moving on, the 5-7 New York Jets. They took out the Kansas City Chiefs at home. Now they hit the road. Oh, my goodness. Here it comes, a Rocky Mountain avalanche. But guess what? The avalanche has been coming down on the Broncos, who are in an absolute tailspin. Eight losses, 9 out of 10. So the Jets at 5-7 have a chance to get to 6-7 with a win. Denver, are they going to end their streak and end the Jets' hopes of a miraculous playoff run?
This game shows me how much things can change. If teams like the Chiefs, to me, feel like the same thing over and over, this game is between a team that, to me, and the Broncos in September, I thought after they beat the Cowboys, looked like one of the more complete teams in the AFC. And everyone had the Jets back then ticketed for 1-15. And here we are, where C.J. Anderson is saying at this point, this is their Super Bowl. This is their playoff game. They want to win this to feel what it feels like to win again in Denver.
What?
And we talked about...
What are you talking about?
That's what he said, and it tells me, like, this is...
Well, not you. I wasn't saying, what are you talking about?
Exactly, Anderson.
C.J. Right? Anderson.
How dare you,
Mark? Talking about?
I just think it's expectations can so quickly change. And a guy like John Elway, who... I think we were comparing to adequately to Ozzie Newsome as the best former player to turn GM in the NFL, and now he's under fire. I think the coach we brought up is a potential hot butt, and if they lose this game, I think they're going to get whacked by the Jets in this game.
Wow.
I think maybe you have to wonder about Vance Joseph, because things have fallen apart so steeply that Elway now is saying he's embarrassed by the season. There's a lot going on here.
This is a good spot for the Jets. I mean... Going on the road in Denver, I don't care. As a Jets fan, I'm like not overly confident in the game. But at the same time, they're playing really well on offense right now. And knowing that Denver struggled so much moving the ball, as bad as the Jets secondary looked against the Chiefs, I do think at this point, and Greg, we talked about it a little bit on our Slack client yesterday, how Josh McCown is playing so well. He's just like feeling himself right now and making good decisions. And every week he's putting the Jets in position to win games because they're scoring 20 to 30 points typically. And that's more than you could have expected in August.
It's amazing. This is going to be his best complete season as an NFL quarterback, assuming he gets through it all at 38 years old. You know he's feeling it, because my favorite play every week is the play where he's pointing at his receivers to go. I mean, that's the Josh McCown move.
I love that move.
He's been doing it for 14 years, kind of just running around pointing for them where to go, and it's all working this year.
It's a shame Robbie Anderson tweaked his hamstring in practice this week, because The game that he and Jermaine Kearse played last week, I thought was one of the best games by a wide receiver duo all year by any wide receiver duo. And McCown played well too, but the Jets are one of the most fun versions of the Jets that I've seen in many years.
Yeah, Jermaine Kearse, who, by the way, as a reminder, was a throw-in in the Sheldon Richardson deal, so they also have the second-round pick. And Anderson has emerged as kind of a real playmaker. He has 7 touchdowns this year now. That's 6th in the league. And over the past, since week 12, Kearse and Anderson are in the top 5 in receiving. Anderson on pace for 1,100 yards a season, and Kearse on pace for 900 yards. They've had a really nice season as a pair.
They've had back-to-back 100-yard games, both of them. It's the first time that's happened for the Jets. This is a statement how tough it's been for Jets fans. In 50 years since Don Maynard and George Sauer did it in 1967.
I brought up that factoid on Tuesday, but you brought the Maynard Sauer angle to it. So you didn't completely waste our time.
Read up.
All right. You know, you try to say something nice about the Jets, and this is what happens.
Go read up on George Sauer, listeners out there. One of the most fascinating football players ever.
Oh, but and by the way, I have good, all the season, Mark.
Sauer pop.
To your credit, no, don't you besmirch a Jets legend just because we don't have many.
I wasn't. I was saying good Sauer pop. And, you know, it's just
Sauer pop.
It's just not probably ever going to happen again. That
probably not.
Call 30-second
you're right,
Sauer bomb.
Mark, all season you have been saying how you've enjoyed the Jets, and I've been trying to distance myself, and you know. I'm still trying to keep my head from getting too in the clouds on them making a playoff run. But at the same time, I haven't really gone in all in on them at all this season at any point in terms, at least in this podcast studio. Screw that. You know what? The New York Jets, they need to win a bunch of games.
Uh-oh.
They might have to win every game.
Oh, no.
They get to January.
What?
And I don't know if that's going to happen. Probably not. But I'll tell you what they are going to win. They're going to win on Sunday. The Rocky Mountain Avalanche. Here comes global warming, because I'm locking it up. J-E-T-S, let's go, baby.
Can't wait.
That spells certain doom for that team.
I like it. It's the right time for it.
Let's do it. Come on, Jets. Make this fun.
They're playing the literal last-ranked team in Football Outsiders in the league. They can do it.
Let's have some fun.
The worst. They just lost 35-9 to the Dolphins.
Let's give Francesa a little playoff push before he leaves the building at FAN. Let's go. Do it for Mike Francesa. Who says that? Let's move on. The Washington Redskins, 5-7, season over, most likely after that loss to the Cowboys last Thursday. They travel to Los Angeles to play at the soccer stadium. The Chargers, 6-6. Wes, the Chargers, everybody pumped up. Is there any reason to have concerns about the Charger team this week?
No. They're playing a team that is in absolute tatters because they lose important starters every week. The Redskins roster right now is not close to what it was in September and October. Their offensive line got pushed around and just thoroughly eviscerated by the Dallas Cowboys defensive line last week. And the Ingram Bosa Chargers are going to toy with them this week. And I'm going to have to lock this up. I'm not going to be too dramatic about it, but I allowed myself to imagine the Chargers with Justin Tucker and a semblance of a home field advantage. And the Patriots and Steelers would be afraid of this team. How many teams have a franchise quarterback, a well-rounded running back, a Danny Woodhead-like scat back, a legitimate number one receiver, big play guys at wide receiver 2 and 3, a top 5 tight end.
Top 5!
The best pass rushing duo in the NFL.
I hear you!
And a top 5 secondary. This team is loaded. And if it wasn't for bad luck and bad kicking earlier in the year, They'd be the talk of the AFC right now.
I'm a little worried. The one thing as a Chargers kind of backer is that Anthony Lynn in a tight game in a big spot. I feel like there's been a couple moments here where I've worried. You know, most of their wins have been comfortable for the most part. So I'd be a little worried about that in a playoff situation or maybe going down the stretch. But to give him credit, I think he had an epiphany. Not maybe that different from Ron Rivera having that epiphany way back in the day. And his epiphany was, this should be a passing team. This should be Phillip Rivers' team. I need to get out of my whole ground and pound, that's what I'm all about mindset. And the second he did that about 4 weeks ago, they have thrown the ball really well. And you saw late last week in the first half, Phillip Rivers fumbles the ball with about a minute 40 left. Could have totally turned the game in the first half. It's 2nd and 19. And I feel like at the beginning of the season, Lynn would have just run the ball there and gone into halftime. But you know what he let Rivers do is just go bomb it away because he's playing the Browns. They got points before halftime, and they've been really aggressive throwing the ball.
I don't think the score of that Browns game could in any way reveal how much they dominated for moments at a time. You saw a team with star players operating at star level against a team hoping they had that kind of a roster. You are going to win this game because West just locked it up for you if you're the Chargers.
That's not helping their cause.
We'll see. You have the Chiefs next week.
West, one of three of the four of us under 500 this year.
That could take care of the AFC West. Then you have the Jets and the Raiders to close out the year. This team is going to get into the playoffs, and they're going to win a playoff game, and either the Patriots or the Steelers are going to have to deal with this. No one's going to want to. And if you go back and watch that Chargers-Patriots game, score aside, that was one of the better performances by the Los Angeles defense this year. They put it to Brady for a long stretch of that game. I think this is a very interesting team.
Just win this game. Take care of business.
They will.
Because my fear is just knowing Chargers history, is that they're going to blow one of these games. I feel like this game could be one of those games because Kirk Cousins, I know he's playing behind an offensive line that's messed up, but I like him as a player, Wes. I know we've talked about how he's a guy that's making things happen.
And they're a weird team.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. I think this is going to be a game. I think this is, and I think if the Chargers can find a way in this game, I'm going to feel a lot better about them. Because I agree with you guys. I think they are the best team in the AFC West, but Chargers going to charger. That's all. That's my only concern right now. That's all.
They're not the Bengals.
But their record,
ask a Chargers
fan
about that.
Their record in point games decided by 8 points or less backs you up entirely. There's no team anywhere close to the heartache they felt in that scenario.
Those days are over.
If you could find a Chargers fan,
AC Slater.
I mean, it's tough because they're up there at number one in the pain rankings. They got that number one pain ranking spot.
Yeah, so, read that. You know, read that and tell me if they've had a nice history. Fulton, we got to get AC Slater on the podcast to talk the Chargers if they make the playoffs. Let's get on the horn.
I'm on top of it. All right. Saw him the other day at Raw, so.
What if we get Matt Money Smith instead?
You would take Money over Slater?
In any walk of life.
Wow.
all right, moving on. Big game. Big game. Interconference.
Non-conference.
It's non-conference, yeah.
Intra
would be inside the conference.
Inter would be.
I think inter would be inside the conference.
Yeah, intra is outside.
Just go non-conference.
We've got to get the intra right.
Well, if you don't know which is which, then it's, I think it, that's... It's,
well, that's why I'm asking you. Some people are like, oh, I'm too smart to ask.
Yeah, but if none
I know,
of us...
I'll guess or not
intra.
Say it.
None of us know.
Intra. That's all I'm asking.
Intra means inside, within. Yeah. Intra-conference is within the...
Let's see why your listeners understand. And clearly, even we don't understand.
Okay, so...
I was schooled on this by someone on Twitter a few weeks ago.
You and Mark were right. I was wrong.
No, inter, because it's like when you take the interstate, that will go through different states.
If anything, yes, I would say interconference.
Interconference matchup.
Non-conference feels safe.
Overly safe. That's all I'm saying about that.
AFC-NFC matchup.
Overly safe.
An interconference matchup between the 8-4 Seattle Seahawks, who have won two straight, including that huge win on Sunday night against the Eagles, against the 8-4 Jacksonville Jaguars, who beat up on a bad Colts team last week. Oh, my goodness, what a game, Greg. Do you think the Seattle defense, by the way, where are you at on the Seattle defense missing most of the Legion of Boom? Do we still believe they can get big stops in a big spot?
I do. We saw it last week. Frank Clark dominated that game and has played great over the last month. Michael Bennett is still there. Bobby Wagner is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Earl Thomas is one of the best safeties in football. KJ Wright's very good. So, okay, you're missing some guys. How many teams have a top six players that good? I mean, it's still a very good defense. I like the matchup better, and I like that their offensive line quietly has played fairly well, I would say, over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I was talking in this studio. No, I'm not lying.
Do it.
I was talking in this studio that their offensive line versus the Eagles, biggest mismatch possible in football, and they played pretty well against Philly.
I thought you were heading there because the tone of your voice.
I was just getting excited.
Question for me. I mean, you have to do, if you're Jacksonville, what no one's been able to do, and you got to remove Russell Wilson, a guy that leads the league with 82.2% of your team's yardage, and you keep waiting for it to happen, and I thought it would happen against the Eagles to some extent, and it does not. Jacksonville has been fascinating to watch week to week. They are erasing quarterbacks entirely in terms of big plays downfield. what will happen against Seattle's offense? Will they be able to pull it off?
Is Mike Davis legit? Because that was the best.
Certainly looks like
it. He looks like it.
That was the best running back performance. It's kind of like, is Mike Davis legit? Is the Seahawks team legit? Because that game last week to me was about as meaningful a result that we've seen all season. But it maybe doesn't. It doesn't mean that much if they don't win this game. Like if they go into Jacksonville, it's like I'm in on them as one of the real contenders.
Well, yeah, I think this game is big for taking a lot of things seriously. Russell Wilson's offense is 15th in drive success rate. If I'm going to take him seriously as an MVP candidate, he's got to go into Jacksonville and put it on a historically great pass defense. I want to see the Seahawks be more consistent on offense if I'm going to believe that Russell Wilson is in Tom Brady's category.
One thing I thought watching the Jaguars that, again, they're going to find a quarterback in this offseason, someone that they can trust more than Blake Bortles. And Marquise Lee had a really good game last week. Dede Westbrook looks good. You've got weapons here, and they're not far away from having an offense that can do just what the defense can do. Bortles and then they're an issue in the AFC for 10 years to come.
It's probably the coaching, but it is worth noting. Bortles has been significantly better than he
fine last
a year
week.
Ago.
That's mechanics.
Yeah, and I think he's probably been better over the last month than he has in the first 2 months.
I mean, so, he had that meltdown. But if,
right,
if
but even that game, that's a good example. Like, even that game, he played such a great first 50, 52 minutes or something.
So, the Arizona game?
No, I think you're talking about the Jacksonville. Yeah.
There's so many meltdowns.
The Chargers game.
The Chargers game, you're right. There's a lot of different meltdowns.
If you get what he did against Indianapolis, you can beat teams. No
I'm just saying, I think
you're not going to play the Colts every
week. I'm saying he's like the 23rd or 24th best quarterback in the league, which is seven or eight spots.
Job's also a lot easier than some of those quarterbacks you would rank behind him.
Doesn't it feel like, though, if he's the 24th best quarterback, that maybe he's like hitting a ceiling there? That there is a floor where he's
going to
play like the worst quarterback in the league for the rest of the season?
They have to replace him.
Yes.
He's not even Rex Grossman, who was hitting big plays down the field that year that the Bears defense and special teams were so good. Bortles doesn't hit big plays down the field with any kind of
play. I love this game.
If your quarterback ceiling is top 25, go find another quarterback.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's no arguing that.
My quarterback's easily top 30, guys. All right, moving on.
Dan's feeling that Josh McCown love.
Josh McCown is like, what? Is he the 11th best quarterback this year in the league?
I thought he was the one guy on Greg's list I would have considerably higher.
Where do you have him?
I think I had him 17th.
He's had a better year than Derek Carr.
17. They're close.
Damn, bro.
They're close.
Let's cold-blooded, man. He's having a really nice season.
Got to re-sign him, right?
As long as it doesn't turn into a Fitz negotiation. Hopefully they learn from that mistake.
It's got to be McCown and a rookie, I think, you would think.
Makes sense. Yo, wait, you're not giving Kristen Hackenberg a chance?
No, I think did you say him Kristen Hackenberg?
Whatever his name is, you're going to be on Chris Law's list. You don't want to be there.
Yeah, Chris Law's bit has kind of faded off the earth a little bit.
You don't see it too much anymore.
No, not really too much. Moving on. Here we go. It is the Fox game of the week, probably. Just a guess. I'm guessing it is. The Philadelphia Eagles, 10-2, leaders in the NFC East. They got humbled a little bit by the Seahawks last Sunday, but still in very good position for the number one seed if they take care of business. But now here come the Los Angeles Rams. Oh, what a game. You gotta love it, Mark. Carson Wentz versus Jared Goff. And if the Rams don't win this, they are out of the conversation for getting a bye. Most likely. And all of a sudden, things get a little tricky for them because there's so much heat beneath them as well.
Man, last week against the Cardinals, it was another example. They suddenly were up 16-0, and you didn't even know how it happened. It just happened so quickly. It's their defense, their offense, special teams played a big role in that game down the stretch. I love these two teams, and I love this NFC, and everyone always kills on the schedule makers early, and they deserve it early with some weird stuff. But this great loaded NFC is giving us one or two of these matchups every week now. And these are two teams that we dumped on for a long time for a variety of reasons. They are the two teams in the league that aggressively traded up to get their quarterbacks. It's worked out. They both hired offensive-minded coaches and paired them with very experienced defensive coaches. They've got stars on both sides of the ball. And it made me think, watching Sean McVay and what he's done with the Rams, how many careers are altered and saved and revived by what's happened. That a guy like Jared Goff, who we could not have been more concerned about a year ago, has completely rounded into shape as a franchise quarterback. Todd Gurley, a guy that a year ago was franchise poison and someone that couldn't get anything going, he is unbelievable. I love the way he runs. But you throw, well, he was last year.
Poison.
You throw the ball to him, and his screen game and what he's doing in the passing game, it is tough to imagine how the Rams get stopped unless they run into some sort of defensive game plan that finds a way to shut everyone down. There's too many weapons here.
That was one of the best lead-ins we've had all year to a matchup.
Ooh,
well
yeah.
done, Mark.
Thank you.
Nice work, Mark.
Thank you, Dan.
Gurley, you mentioned in the passing game.
I forgot about those, the Wes asides where he compliments Mark.
I have really missed those.
All right, go ahead.
I agree. It was impassioned, and it's true.
Informed as well.
We also, well, all right. We have seen them go against a really good defense a few times this year, and they haven't shown up. They scored 10 points against the Seahawks. They scored 7 points against the Vikings. This is a really good defense they're playing on Sunday against Philadelphia. So I think you are going to have to show that it's not just McVay's great coaching, that the players have to win their one-on-one battles. Like Todd Gurley, I think, has been doing especially. To me, he's not an MVP candidate, but I did a top five this week, and he was the best guy I could come up with for number five. He is averaging more yards per reception than Dez Bryant, than Demaryius Thomas, than Michael Thomas, than a lot of great wide receivers.
Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
Like, than a lot of good wide receivers in the league, and he's a very steady, very good running back.
He's breaking tackles to do it.
Yeah, you talk about one-on-one matchups, and we complained last year that he doesn't make anyone miss. He's been the exact opposite this year.
And
he should be... Right now, to me, he has a clear lead as the first-team All-Pro running back.
I agree. I mean, Bell has played. We'll get to him.
Kamara would be in the mix.
Yeah, but I agree. I would go with him. But this is a tough matchup, and you kind of expect Philadelphia to be able to run the ball better than you do the Rams. LeGarrette Blount and Clement and that team who really didn't get the running game going last week. You kind of look at, for instance, Kerwin Williams running all over the Rams, and you think. Okay, what is Blount in this Eagles team? Because it's ultimately kind of a run-first team. Despite Carson Wentz, I think they kind of go off the running
game. I kind of love the Eagles in this game. I know they're on the road, and I respect the Rams, but I thought that was the, you know, you heard that floating around, like...
Team of ATL.
That was a very half-hearted how dare you.
Yeah, because it makes sense. That feels great.
I'm a little annoyed when people float things like, hey, this is kind of a good loss for the Eagles. Gives them humbles them a little bit.
Some surfer character just rolled off the Pacific Ocean to take a shot at the Eagles.
But really good teams, and almost every team loses every once in a while, unless you're the Patriots now. But like, you bounce back and you deliver a performance. And Carson Wentz, who wasn't horrible against the Seahawks, but wasn't Carson Wentz that we've seen. I expect him to have a big game. I think the Eagles are a better team than the Rams. And I think they're going to show it in this game. I really did consider locking it up, but I had to show my boys Gangrene some love. The only Gangrene in town. But I feel very strongly about the Eagles. Mm. What do you guys think? Let's pick this game.
Well, I agree with you that it's a good pick. I think Sean McVay is the wild card. I just think the world of him as a coach. But I agree the Eagles are the better team, and I think it's a good spot for them coming back from last week. So I'm on Dan's side here.
I'm going to take the Rams because that's what I want to see happen, and I have no clue what is going to happen. And Sammy Watkins, it's been great to see him playing better the last few weeks. Robert Quinn's been playing better, so some of their stars are playing better. Maybe they come through.
I'm going to go Eagles. Even in that game that where Wentz, that was not a Carson Wentz typical game. Tate made two of the greatest plays we've seen all year.
It's true.
And I think they're going to win in a close one.
You know, the Rams don't get a lot of respect, even in this room. Football Outsiders, for instance, number one team in the NFL. Eagles are number two. This is like the best matchup you can possibly
have.
Well,
I would rather deal with Football Insiders. Thank you.
That's, by the way, you admitted that you have no idea what's going to happen.
Of course not.
Whoa. It's hard you getting here. We all know what's going to happen at all times. I don't understand. All right, boys, let's move to Sunday Night Football. The Baltimore Ravens, 7-5, riding a 3-game winning streak. Now travel to Pittsburgh, Heinz Field, to face the Steelers, who have that humongous matchup looming against the Patriots. But first, they got to deal with another rival in the Ravens. Last Monday night, that incredibly violent and physical affair with the Cincinnati Bengals that the Steelers won in the final seconds. The big story out of that game, of course, was the injury suffered by linebacker Ryan Shazier, who suffered a spinal injury. We hadn't been getting a lot of information in the last few days, and we did get an update before we came upstairs today that Shazier underwent spinal stabilization surgery Wednesday night to address the spinal injury suffered on Monday. The surgery took place at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and Ian Rappaport, our NFL Network insider, reported Thursday that the surgery will necessitate months of recovery, according to sources, before he even considers a return to football. His season is over, and in terms of a long-term look for Shazier, it's still unclear.
Yeah, I think his defensive coordinator put it well Thursday that he's just worried about Ryan as a person and his future and then quality of life. And I think it's that sort of stage that we're in now. We really don't know what it's going to mean football-wise, but it's kind of hanging. It's one of the bigger stories of the season. It's kind of hanging over the Steelers organization, you know, in particular, I would imagine, going into this game.
Yeah, there hasn't been a game all year that I can look back on outside of that Bengals-Steelers game that left more of a shadow, where there's so much that came out of that. You've got the Juju Smith-Schuster suspension for this Ravens game, and you've lost Shazier, who the Pittsburgh defense has been, for me, as much as the offense gives you a lot of hope, the defense is the reason I think they can potentially knock out the Patriots if they get there in the playoffs.
And credit, that's different than you say on text, by the way. That's a different message. That you send to us every game, every time we watch a Steelers.
You say the I think the AFC is over.
I think, though, but I've rethought the Steelers a little bit. I really think that this whole thing that's happened to them, sometimes something happens to a team and it kind of re-galvanizes you and changes you. I think the Steelers are a different
team coming
out of this.
That's interesting. Because Shazier is so important, Wes, to that Steelers defense, and to their credit, after the shock of that situation, they shut down Cincinnati without Shazier in the second half, and they're going to have another opportunity to shut down an offense because Baltimore struggles typically, but they came to life last week. Do you like the Ravens to score some more points this week?
Every year it seems like there's a team that we judge the first 3 months of the season who they are, and we expect it to stay static, but then they take it up a notch on one side of the ball or the other. And who they are in December and January is totally different. And maybe the Ravens are. They have some materials to work with on offense. Would you guys believe that these two teams average the same number of points per game?
Yeah, Baltimore's had 30 points plus a game for the last 5 weeks. Mm.
The Ravens score more points per game than the Falcons and Chargers.
Now, it's largely because of their defense and because of their special teams setting them up, but it doesn't matter on the scoreboard. It's all that matters is how much you
score. 40-point games and two low 20-point games, so a little bit misleading, but still.
It is misleading, and when you watch the film, they are not an impressive offense. But I think they do have the materials to be one if Flacco ups his game. And last week was his best game of the year. Receivers even dropped 3 or 4 passes when he was on the money. That's an encouraging sign. Now, can they do it multiple weeks in a row now that they're getting really healthy on offense? That's the question.
I'll go a step further. That was one of the best games any quarterback's played all season. I was kind of stunned when I went back and watched that he more or less pitched the perfect game. There were almost no throws that you would take back from him. And he had about 12, 13 really difficult wins into tight windows or down the field. And I was thinking, like, is this the anomaly? Like, do I just not trust this after what I saw for 11 weeks? Or does it just make them embarrassed about what happened for 11 weeks? Because actually, Joe Flacco can be pretty good. I don't know.
It's a good question.
I have no idea.
Wait, are you saying again that you don't know something?
I'm saying, like, how does he had the worst numbers in the entire league, and he played awesome. He looked, if you put that game in the middle of the 2012 playoffs, it would have fit right.
Well, what if you flipped it? Let's say a quarterback played 12 pristine games, then had an absolute nightmare. What would you tend to believe?
I wouldn't trust it, and that's why I'm locking this one up for the old Steelers.
That was underwhelming.
I know.
Your confidence seems to be shaken at the least.
Oh, of course. I'm 6-7. Literally, it is. You would have had more locks if you went the exact opposite of
literally
exactly what I did. Could not be worse.
I don't think the Steelers defense is what it was a month ago, and it's not just Shazier. Their edge rushers are a lot more inconsistent. T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree. And their cornerbacks have been problems since Joe Hayden's injury. I don't think that they're a shutdown unit.
And how important has Shazier been in terms of being the center of that defense? According to our next-gen stats, entering Week 13, Shazier was on the field for 640 of 647 total snaps. That's 98.9% of playing time. He is the heartbeat of that defense. So they need some of these guys that have went quiet to step up to fill the void. They did a really nice job against Cincinnati, but the Bengals have their demons. So you don't know how much was the Steelers and how much was Cincinnati gagging. They're going to be tested again down the stretch.
The more fascinating matchup for me is when the Steelers are on the field. That offense has been getting better rhythm lately. The Ravens are without Jimmy Smith. Marlon Humphrey, their rookie, got picked on a week ago. And Ben's had his timing with Martavis Bryant. I know you don't have Juju Smith-Schuster this week, but you still have to deal with those two receivers on the outside. And I'm not sure this Ravens defense is as historical and great. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to shut down Pittsburgh.
You know, I think Bryant's back.
He's had
several plays, including the kickoff return, where he looks absolutely explosive. He's getting to the edge and running by people. And I think the Steelers' offense can make up for what they're missing on defense.
And finally, Monday Night Football, the New England Patriots, 10-2, riding a 8-game winning streak. Good job, guys. Travel now to Miami to face the Dolphins. The Dolphins whipped up on the Broncos last week, but everybody does that now. Before that, they had lost 5 in a row. And, Greg, before we completely check this one in the box for the throne of ease, it should be noted that Tom Brady has lost 8 games in Miami in his career, 7-8. That's the only place other than Denver where he has a losing record. I wrote about that a little bit yesterday, and some Patriots guy came at me and said, it all happens in the early season. I don't know if that's true or right, and you could throw the humidity angle at it. But it's worth noting that Brady and the Pats have not thrived in Miami.
That's also
just noting.
This guy on Twitter is wrong. A lot of them. Some of them
I figured he was
early, but they lost in December, I believe, on the way to winning a Super Bowl a few years back. So it happens. I think this is a different Dolphins team, though. I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
Think this is a.
There's no Ronnie Brown Wildcat coming at them.
It's not a competitive Dolphins team. The one thing I think I'm concerned about as a Patriots fan is Brady has taken a lot of hits the last month. So he did like the first month of the season, kind of went away, and he has really taken a beating week after week the last month, playing great through it.
And they talk about him dealing with an Achilles injury, which does not appear on the field from what I can see. But they don't have Rob Gronkowski. I think if that happened a week later against Pittsburgh, that would be a massive loss.
They will get Chris Hogan back, which
that helps.
Good for them.
They're 12-0 without Gronk. And by the way, if you look at their points per game and their yardage in the 12 games since 2016 that they did not have Gronk, they would lead the NFL in both categories. So I do think Brady's production is so different without Gronk. His numbers go down, but it doesn't seem to sink the team as the way it did in years previous when he got hurt.
Great stats, Mark. I have one that's even more disgusting. The filthiest stat of week 14. You ready for it?
Please.
This comes from Rich Hrebar of RotoWorld. Hope I got his last name.
Does a good job on Hrebar. He does a weekly cheat sheet, I think he calls it.
The worksheet, it's called, and he does a great job at Lord Reeves on Twitter. Nice little pop there for a friend, Rich. Anyway, here it comes. The last time the Patriots ran a play while trailing in a game was the first quarter of week 8. Hashtag save football. Hashtag cancel the Patriots.
How about we cancel all the rotten teams like the Dolphins and stuff?
Right.
There's
going
to be nothing left.
I'm all about
that. There'll be nobody left to play.
Traction.
You want some Throne of Ease commentary here? I kind of feel the Patriots need some more tests in their schedule right now. They've come after the bye, and it's been Cupcake City. Even before the bye, the Broncos and the Raiders weren't the teams that they expected. Yes, they get the Steelers next week, and that's good. But I don't like that they've played basically the dregs of the league. The Jets are going to be the second toughest game they have in the second half of the schedule.
Well,
week 17.
We've heard all about their defensive turnaround, but when you look at this team, who they faced, all the good offenses that they've beaten, the Saints, the Falcons, the Chargers, they played those teams before the offense has started humming.
They've timed the schedule. Sometimes it's when you play a team, and I think the Patriots have been fortunate.
The football gods have, and the football gods hate the fan bases of many other teams, many, many other, but not yours, Greg.
Definitely.
Yours they smile down upon week after week.
Well, you know who...
And you sit in your little comfortable chair, and angels feed you grapes, and half-clothed humans
cherubs.
Pour wow. sort of, you know, liquid and drinks and wine down your throat.
Jesus
have a nice
juice,
time.
As they call it.
I mean, the football gods wearing a headset on the sidelines and taking snaps behind center, those are your football gods.
Oh!
Give me a break.
Save it for the religion podcast, the theology podcast, guys. That is it for the Week 14 preview. The next time you hear from us, it will be Sunday night when we recap all the games. NFL Pick'em, by the way, is the television show on NFL Network that they put us on for a few minutes every week. And you could check that out. A little different schedule this week, guys. Saturday at 8 a.m. Eastern and then Sunday at 6 a.m. Eastern. Does that mean we lost?
We've lost two showings.
All right, so we're being phased out of the NFL Network schedule.
Oh, good to know.
That's a bad move.
Good to know.
That's fine.
We were on Up to the Minute Thursday. It'll be too late for people that listen to us, but I, you know.
We're scheduled on Up to the Minute on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We get bumped there once or twice a week, too. So
listen,
try to catch it.
Don't go out of your way, though. Don't feel like you have to go out of your way.
I wouldn't call us shooting stars on the network side. I would call us, you know, meek constellations.
We're utility players.
We are.
We're role players.
We're definitely role players.
You know, your third baseman gets a sprained ankle. You need someone to fill in for a couple games.
Well, Randy Velarde's.
We're there.
And no more.
Chico Ruiz.
You need like an Andy Stankiewicz type. You need a Gabe Kapler. Give me a Reds utility guy, Wes.
Chico Ruiz. He has the greatest quote in baseball history.
What was it?
He was a utility guy, and he had to play every day for a couple of months, and he said, bench me or trade me.
I love it.
Like
the attitude.
All right, there you go. Let's get out of here. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Lindsay Fulton behind the glass. Till Sunday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.